This is Invest Talk from KPP Financial, helping investors make sense of the markets one day at a time. Here's your host, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Wednesday, May 27th, 2026 edition of Invest Talk, and a lot of moving parts in today's markets and today's financial news. Understandably, it can make your job more difficult. A lot of noise, but we are here to settle you down right into the pocket where you're making sound decisions. You're not using your emotions. You are focusing on what matters. Oftentimes, I don't know if you realize this, but the things that are spoken about on financial media, they don't matter very much. They don't. How often do you hear financial media talking about fund flows through 401ks and how that drives a lot of the moves in markets in the near term? I guarantee you that's far more important than the vast majority of things that are spoken about on financial media. But you never hear about it. Why? Because it's kind of in the weeds. It's not as interesting. It's not as doesn't attract the eyeballs. And that's what they're all about. They're all about the eyeballs. We're here to help you become a better investor, so that your eyes are on the right topics, focusing on the correct variables that truly matter. So that's what this hour is about. Educating you, giving you actionable material, keeping you informed in a way. You know, we're just here for that. We're not here to, obviously, want to grow. We want more people to listen to Invest Talk, but mainly because we want to help people, not just sell ads, for example. It's not our main goal. Our main goal is to help you become a better investor. Now, as you know, we wrapped up our latest Invest Talk Wealth webinar back on May 6th, just earlier this month. But guess what? We're moving on to the next one. Our last topic was inflation. And what's directly tied to inflation? Well, income and income opportunities. As inflation rises, income opportunities tend to become more important. Which ones you pick become more important. And that's why we are hosting Beyond the Yield, How to Invest for Your Income Needs, coming up June 30th from 12 to 1 p.m. Pacific time. So you can head over to investtalk.com and register. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance. We'll run out of the show topics for the hour. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
Hello, this is Brandon from Kentucky. I'm calling to ask about valuation, specifically for Capricor Therapeutics. Ticker symbol is CAPR. Thank you.
CAPR, Capricor Therapeutics, is the name that has jumped considerably just over the past couple of months. CAPR, let me pull this up on my other chart. This is as you would imagine from the name, it's a biotech company. It jumped from around six and change back at the beginning of December all the way to a high on the next day in early December, $40 and change. And it's just been kind of consolidating, chopping sideways in a range right around the $30 level, give or take about, you know, $8 on each side. Earnings are still negative, although they're improving. They're becoming less negative. Last year, earnings were negative $2.26. That's the most money they ever lost in a particular year. But this year, earnings are only supposed to be negative 59 cents and then negative 69 cents next year. So That is a good sign, shall we say. If you look at revenue last quarter was zero. And then if you look, let me zoom forward, revenue is supposed to start to pour in here in the third quarter. Go from zero, first quarter and second quarter, to $66.9 million, then $50 million, and then $12 million in the first quarter of next year. But the market cap is still $1.7 billion. They're still going to lose money. What do they do? They're They develop treatments for, let's see, exosome-based therapy for, interesting, Duchenne syndrome, muscular dystrophy. There we go. A rare form of muscular dystrophy. Interesting. Okay. So clearly it's a very niche name. This is a difficult one. These biotech names are hard to value because you really have to know what is the total addressable market for this drug. From this description, it's a rare form of muscular dystrophy. Well, what's rare? Is it 100 a year, 1,000 a year, 10,000 a year? Rare can mean a lot of different things. So until you dig into that and say, okay, how much can they really charge for it? How effective is it really? I would imagine maybe in December there were some sort of clinical trials that they got through and now they're able to get to market here at the end of this year. So that's ultimately what the market is starting to price in. So technically it looks fine. It's in an uptrend. It's consolidating. So you have to dig deep and say, what is the total addressable market for this drug? How many people have this disease that are still alive? Because this is saying that results in premature death. So I would be looking at that. Besides that, it's just a story. And you need to really unpack that story before you can say this is attractive or not. But it's certainly an interesting one to do further research on. Now, we have a great show for you today. We're looking into the story, how gold is climbing. Or sorry, yesterday's show was about how gold is climbing, what oil and the dollar are falling, and what that tells investors. We also answer questions on Starbucks and many more. And if you happen to miss it, go check it out. Best way to get every Invest Talk show is by heading over to wherever you get your podcasts. We're pretty much everywhere now. So we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes for today's show. And our main focus point is about hedging in a record market. Strategies for protecting gains without missing upside. So we'll look at what to do now. The stocks have surged from their late March lows. So we'll walk you through key hedging strategies available to everyday investors, explain the costs and trade-offs of each approach. Because guess what? Every decision you ever make in markets have costs. They have trade-offs. They have pros and cons. So unless you are fully aware of that, you're kind of shooting in the dark. Our job here is to keep your eyes wide open so that you are accurately pinpointing those costs and those trade-offs. So we'll dig into that story. In addition, regulators have loosened their grip on banks. But what impact has that had when it comes to earnings, when it comes to lending, and all of that? And then consulting firms. AI is threatening some of the biggest names out there. So what does this mean for the Deloittes of the world? We'll dig into that as well. Then we have voice bank calls. One is on railroad stocks. The other is on Gentex Corporation, GNTX. And of course, as always, questions that came in via the comments section on the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. And most importantly, will be your live calls. And we welcome them right now at 888-99-CHART with whatever question you have on your mind. But we're going to head to a quick break. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the Invest Talk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART. But up next, I'll comment on today's market activity.
For investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You've found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. InvestTalk.
8899-CHART, 8899-242-7-8. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Let's take a quick look at the markets today. It was kind of a mixed bag, flat overall. Large cap growth certainly lagged most of all, down about 0.7% on the day. But the S&P up 1 point, and NASDAQ up 18 points, which would be actually 7 basis points, 0.07%. Dow was the strongest, up 182 points, about a third of 1%. You certainly had some notable names down pretty big. Palantir down 3%. Palo Alto Networks down 3%. Qualcomm down 6%. Let's see what else was down pretty big. Yeah, CrowdStrike down about 4% on the day. Meta was the strongest of the Mag 7, up nearly 4%, but NVIDIA down 1%, AMD down 1.6%. Some of the financials down as well. JP Morgan and Bank of America down over 2%. Same with Wells Fargo, almost 2% to the downside. So some red there as well. I think there's still a lot of the market's kind of waiting to get some more data on PCE that comes out tomorrow. That is a inflation gauge that the Fed likes to focus on. So that will be probably a market mover tomorrow. And we also are lacking a lot of details surrounding the U.S.-Iran talks. It looks like there's a 30-day timeline to restore the Straits of Hormuz traffic, 60-day negotiation period, but really not much beyond that. So that will be something the market will be looking out for over the coming days. What else do we have? Do we have any economic news? Yeah, no real economic news on that front. But yeah, very mixed day. Not a whole lot, frankly, to talk about from a market movement perspective. You had yields down a little bit, but 1 to 2 basis points, kind of a follow through from the last couple of days where rates have dropped because of the Iran deal expectations that maybe inflation will ebb a little bit, and that will give cover for the Fed to cut rates at some point this year. Dollar index was up 0.1% of the day. Gold was down 1.2, back below 4,500 an ounce. Silver was down 2.2. Bitcoin down 1.3%. WTI finished down 5.6%, the lowest level since April 20th. So that was the market, kind of a quiet session overall. Now, from time to time, we receive questions via web form over on investtalk.com. Here's one that came in early. Said, I'm considering doing a Roth conversion. Thank you for advice regarding EGFFX. After holding it for 10 years in my IRA, I followed your recommendation, got out of it, transferred the funds to Fidelity. It's not currently in a low tax bracket. I have another 18 to 20 years before retirement. Considering doing a Roth conversion, investing proceeds using the following allocation, 40% VTI, which would be the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index. Then there's VXUS, which is the Vanguard Total International Stock Market Index. That's up 20 to 25%. VTV, 15 to 20. And then Qs, 10 to 15. Love to hear your thoughts. Well, first off, that's a very aggressive allocation. And you're talking 18 to 20 years. That's fine. You're looking at VTV, which leans on the value side, but then the Qs, which leans on the growth side. So to me, you're not really picking a direction here besides 20-25% international. Number one, I would up that international. I think 20-25% is probably too low. I would be more like 30-35% international. And I would pretty much completely axe that Qs because you're getting that exposure through VTI. And then you're able to lean on the value side using like a VTV. So that's what I would do is get rid of Qs. You already have an overweight exposure to tech using VTI. And so I would completely allocate that to the foreign markets. So this is okay. There, I would like to be a little more targeted with harder assets. I'd probably include some gold in there and gold and silver, frankly. That's what I would need. I wouldn't want to be 100% equities. If you want to be aggressive, you definitely want some precious metals in this portfolio. So that would at least be 10% up to potentially 20% of this portfolio. Well, we're heading into a break. I'm ready for your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your calls live. InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Today I had a question on railroad stocks. I just wanted to get your overall opinion. I've heard people talk about them in a positive way, negative. I'm just looking to see what you guys think about them. if you could just talk about why railroad stocks are bad investment, just something to kind of help direct me on how I should be looking at these, if at all. I'll be looking forward to hearing your answer on the podcast. And thanks as always, guys.
I'm not sure where you're getting the idea that railroad stocks tend to be bad investments. Actually, they're some of the best businesses in the world. They have natural monopolies on a very efficient way to move goods through different nodes in their network. Yes, there are alternatives of shipping via truck or plane, but those tend to be very inefficient, especially when you're moving large quantities of products to specific locations, especially locations where, you know, there's a large population. And if you go look at the profitability of some of these names, I'm just looking at like Union Pacific, one of the largest out there. Their return on equity right now is 41%. And if I zoom out historically, it's basically, I'm going back to a chart all the way to 1998. And through the early 2010s, the return equity is around 10, 11%, but it's been steadily rising. And over the past decade or so, it's averaged 30, 40%. Now, we own a separate rail company than UNP, but it's still very profitable. These are consistent businesses. Yeah, they tend to be cyclical. But once again, it's they operate an efficient service. Yes, not as flexible as some of the other ones. But for the bulk of the move from, say, the ports to the middle of the country, there's nothing more efficient. Once again, most of them have very strong monopolies on different routes. So I don't know where you're getting the idea that railroad stocks are bad businesses. No, they're actually some of the most incredible businesses out there. They're boring. Sure. They are boring. I get that. Not exciting. It's railroads. It's old school. But the trailing returns are incredible. I mean, if you look at UNP, 15-year total return, 13% annualized. That's very good. Go look at, let's see, the name that we own. Let me just look at these. The name that we own is also a domestic railroad company. Their 10-year annualized return, 19%. So, yes, everybody should have railroad stocks on their watch list. Now is the time to buy it. It's another question. You know, a lot of them have good momentum now. Part of this is higher oil costs. It makes their service even more efficient or more cost effective, shall we say. Because shipping via plane or truck suddenly just got a lot more expensive. So it means that more and more goods are being shipped by rail. I love railroad stocks. Let's keep things moving and drop in another listener question now.
I was hoping you guys could look at a company called Gentex Corporation. Ticker, I believe, is GNTX. It's been on my watch list, now looking to potentially add it to my Roth IRA. Do you guys think that this is a good buy point, or should I be more patient or look somewhere else? Well, listen on the show. Thanks, as always. Bye.
Looking at Gentex, this is an OEM part producer. They design, develop, manufacture, supply automotive and fire protection products. $5 billion market cap. Return equity right around 15%. That's good. Pretty much no debt in their balance sheet, so very clean balance sheet. Consistent profitability around that mid-teens level on return equity basis. I like that. I like that consistency. Take a look at earnings supposed to be up 10% this year, 12% next year, about a 10% free cash flow yield. So I like the valuation you're getting here. They're taking that cash flow, and because they have no debt, they're just paying out a nice little dividend, 2% dividend, but it had been growing over time. It haven't grown it since COVID, which is interesting. They've been instead plowing that cash flow into stock buybacks, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think the issue would be on the revenue growth. It is kind of mid-single digit, so not super exciting. But I generally like the business. I like the valuation here, and enterprise value to EBITDA going forward is only about 8 times. It's down considerably from its high in the high 30s back in the early part of 2024. Now we're trading around $24 and change. But it looks to be finding a floor here in the low 20s. So while I'm not confident it's going to get a bunch of upside traction in the short term, as a trade, I do like the valuations I'm seeing. I like the quality of the balance sheet. I like the profitability, cash flow, the allocation of that cash flow to stock buybacks. So I'm going to give Gentex, GNTX, a thumbs up, but you have to be patient with it. Now, next invest stock, we'll look into the story. SpaceX, OpenAI, and the IPO boom is a wave of mega floats, a market top warning. We'll dig into that story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein, and we're ready to take your calls anytime at 888-99-CHART. At KPP Financial, accountability means more than advice. It means we invest alongside you. Through our parallel investing approach, when we recommend an investment for clients, one or more KPP principals invest their own capital at the same time. Same day, same price, same percentage. If your portfolio moves, ours does too. That is alignment. That is transparency. That is the KPP difference. Visit investtalk.com to get your free portfolio review.
Lately, I've been tackling some heavy lifting in my business strategy, and I've completely reimagined my workflow using Claude as a thinking partner. It's not just about quick fixes. It's about diving deeper into complex problems until I hit those breakthrough moments. I've even set Claude a task from my phone and returned to find the work finished. I've used Claude to build out automation workflows, to troubleshoot technical setups, and accelerate my efficiency on my day-to-day work. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. With deep research and connectors for tools like Google Workspace, Claude acts like a central brain for my work. Even companies like Stripe and Pfizer trust Anthropic for their AI rollouts. For problems worth solving, get started with Claude at claude.ai/invest. That's claude.ai/invest. And check out Claude Pro, which includes access to all the features mentioned in today's episode. claude.ai/invest.
There are a few things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP on the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
It is 99 chart, 8992-4278. It's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, our main focus point is about hedging in a record market. Strategies for protecting gains without missing out on the upside. And we've had some big upside since the March lows, up about 17% on tariff relief optimism, resilient earnings, and huge demand for semiconductors and memory stocks. But that move has, quietly made hedging more affordable and maybe even more sensible. The market is overbought, especially the semiconductor market, which is driving most of this. And there's not a lot of breadth. The equal-weighted S&P has stalled near the prior highs. And so if that is any indication, then there may be some room for hedging. The good news is that the cost to hedge in a traditional way is a lot lower than it has been in a while. The question is, how do you do it? Now, the traditional way would be to buy puts, for example. Many would recommend short-dated puts, meaning like 30 days out. I am not a big fan of that. I'm a much bigger fan of going further out. Now, that costs more, but it will hedge you for longer periods, and you want to do that when the volatility is low, like it is now. If you look at the VIX is now down to levels, close to the levels, lowest levels of the year. That means the cost to hedge is low. And that's when you want to buy insurance. Not when things are falling apart. You want to do that now, if you're going to. And once again, I would be buying further out. I would go all the way out until January. I would probably buy puts 10% of the money, something like that. And then if you get a spike in volatility, you get a meaningful sell-off between now and year end, well, then you'll capitalize whenever that is. And those puts will rally considerably and hedge you to the downside. So the best time to buy insurance is not when the house is burning. It's when the next storm is forming. And we know there's always one coming. The question is, when? So that's why I would buy longer dated protection. So like I said, that is the traditional way to hedge, but there are other ways as well. You could sell call options, kind of the covered call strategy, where you own the underlying and you're still capturing upside, and you sell 5, 10% out of the money. Now, in that case, I would sell shorter because you want to capture what is called theta decay. And you want to sell, this is what we do for our clients in our equity income strategy. We're selling 30, 60 days out and collecting that premium, still capturing upside if there is some, but capturing still very good income that will hedge if the market does decline modestly. That's another way to do it. It's not just buying puts, but it's also selling calls as well. Now, a simpler way would be trailing stop loss. Market drops a certain percentage, you're out, gives you a little wiggle room in case there's short-term volatility. But if you get a more protracted downtrend, well, it stops you out before losses get too egregious. So that's another way to do this. Another would be rebalancing, meaning, hey, you've had a good run. Maybe do you have broad exposure to the S&P or the NASDAQ or any sector that's ran considerably over the past couple of months. Now it's time to maybe trim a little bit and rebalance into asset classes or sectors that are lagging just a bit, yet still have long-term attractiveness. For example, I wouldn't reallocate to long-term bonds, even though long-term bonds have sold off recently, because I think there's more potential downside over the medium to long-term, as inflation likely will stay persistent. But are there sectors that, you know, the baby's being thrown out of the bathwater? For example, healthcare. Healthcare has kind of lagged recently. Does that make sense in an era where the boomer generation is aging rapidly? The question to ask, it's not an obvious answer, but it's certainly a sector that warrants some consideration. And there are many others in the market as well. So rebalancing, systematic rebalancing, targeted rebalancing, strategic rebalancing also is a way to hedge. Because as things go right over a short period of time, well, now you're naturally more exposed to that asset that's gone up in value. You could also buy an inverse ETF. Now, if you were to do that, it would avoid levered ETFs, okay? Only buy single levered ETFs, meaning one for one. It's the S&P inverse ETF. S&P goes down 1%. That inverse ETF goes up roughly 1%. Not levered. Make sure you're avoiding the levered ones. And then there's cash management. So finding yields that is above and beyond what your savings account's getting, or maybe just your standard money market account at your broker. That's another way, is yield optimization, really. So that's another way to, you know, boost your yield without taking on more risk after the market has ran, which could inherently bring more risk. Now you want to look out for a few things. One is the tax implications of rebalancing, selling winning positions. Make sure you're potentially offsetting those gains or cognizant of that. Doesn't mean you avoid taxes altogether, but you're paying attention to it. Now let's pivot over to our 24/7 voice bank. It never closes. So you can leave your finance and investment questions anytime at 888-99-CHART. Here comes another listener question now.
Jeff in Tennessee was calling about Frontline PLC, symbol FRO. I bought this about 4 years ago, and it has done extremely well. I'm up over 200% on it, but the reviews are looking pretty bad. It looks okay to me. I thought I would get your take on it. It's only about 2% of my portfolio right now. I'd like to get your take. Thank you.
All right. This is an interesting one. This is an example of something that ran. And is it time to reduce your exposure considerably? And I would say on this one is yes. Couple reasons. If you go look at the chart, it peaked back in late February, kind of the start of the Iran war. It sold off and then rallied, and it tried to hit those highs, and it couldn't. And it's now rolled over again, and it broke the lows from last week. And it looks, from a MACD perspective, that's weak and showing divergence. There's a lot of topping patterns in this. Then you layer on the top of what it does. It's Frontline. It's a name that's been around a long time. It's one of the first names that I ever looked at from a potential investment perspective decades ago. But their earnings are all over the place. I mean, 2019, they made 77 cents, then lost 5 cents in 2021, then 2.95 in earnings in 2023, then down to $1.70 last year, and then $7.31 expected this year, but then only $3.50 next year. So you can see how up and down this business is, and they own tankers. They own oil tankers. So in a world where oil supplies are being disrupted, well, more oil tankers are being needed. They can charge higher rates, etc. So that's why earnings this year are so high. But I want to be selling when things are good, because they ultimately and inevitably will turn around and be not so good. And right now, return equity is 36%, which looks like, let me see here, that is an all-time high mark, pretty much. I guess in September of 2015, it was 107%, but that's kind of flash in the pan here. 08, you know, before new oil prices were skyrocketing, it did really well. But overall, the average over the past 5 years is 14%. The median is also 14%. And then right now, we're at 36%. So this is not a business that has consistent profitability. I like businesses with consistent profitability. So yes, I would absolutely be, at the bare minimum, cutting this in half, and I probably would be selling the entire position. Now let's go answer another voicemail question now.
Hi, guys. My question is regarding, when you calculate ratios for companies, do you usually use the GAAP or non-GAAP? Because, you know, some of these numbers vary so much. What is your policy when you do your calculations in general? Thank you.
We always use GAAP. Now, can non-GAAP be useful? Yes, it can. But far more often than not, especially when you're getting into growthier names, tech names, etc., they're using non-GAAP numbers because they don't like the way the GAAP numbers come out. Remember, GAAP is generally accepted accounting principles. So that, and it's there for people like us, investors, to look from company to company and know that if we're looking at earnings or cash flow or whatever, that it's calculated in the same manner as every other company that's out there. Now, there are wrinkles, once again, that you have to adjust for that can make certain companies look a little bit different than others. And that's why a lot of them use non-GAAP. But the problem is, once again, non-GAAP is just bastardizing the process of telling the public how the company is doing. So if you and when you hear non-GAAP, one non-GAAP is not the same as another's non-GAAP. They're not using the same non-GAAP process. They're making up their own non-GAAP process and saying, based on this non-GAAP process, this is what our earnings are. But this other company, when they go use non-GAAP, it's a different process. It's a different way of getting that number. So unless you dig into the details, you're probably going to get misleaded. And so that's why we focus on, did I say misleaded? Misled. That's a better way to say it. You're going to be misled. So I would stick with GAAP. Yeah. Let's go take a live call from Vishnu in New Jersey, looking at Checkpoint CHKP.
Yes.
All right. Looking at Checkpoint software. Hey, Justin, do you own it or looking to buy it?
Yeah. No, I'm looking to buy it. I just want to diversify. I don't have any stock from the, you know, the cybersecurity space. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, my worry here is that Checkpoint is one of the worst performing software security names out there. Relative strength is 9.9. Okay, so the question is, are you seeing something about the business that the rest of the world isn't, or vice versa? Are you just looking at this because it looks cheap, or do you feel like the market is not understanding how strong of a business they actually have?
No, I was just looking randomly. So I thought, you know, I might ask you, what do you think of the company?
Well, if I'm just looking at the raw numbers, it does look fairly cheap. Return equity is 36%. That's good. But its competitors are usually much better. Its free cash flow is $1.2 billion. That's good. And that is at an all-time high. They have a good balance sheet. What are they doing with that cash? Mm-hmm. Well, they are buying back shares. That's good. The issue to me is the chart. And the short float is about 4.8%. It's actually not that high for a $13 billion market cap. You know, I like what you are looking at from a valuation perspective, quality of the business, quality of the balance sheet. Earnings, though, expected to drop 12% this year. Up 10% next year, but those estimates are coming down as well. So that's the issue, is that the trajectory of their business is just headed downward and the stock is reflecting it. I would need some momentum for me to get excited about this name. And the momentum to me is downward. I don't want to be in a down momentum stock. I want to be something that's moving higher and gaining momentum. So until this breaks above the 100-day moving average, I would pass on it because the downtrend is just too strong. Keep on your watch list because I do like the valuation and the profitability and the balance sheet. But until that momentum turns around, I'm staying far away from Checkpoint, CHKE. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART. Ever feel like your team's scaling efforts are hitting a wall? It's usually not a budget issue. It's a knowledge gap. Critical processes live in people's heads, and manual documentation is just too painful to actually finish. This is exactly why I'm excited about today's sponsor, Scribe. Scribe is a workflow AI platform that captures any process in real time and builds step-by-step guides automatically. No manual writing and no manual screenshots required. And it's trusted by over 80,000 enterprises, including nearly half of the Fortune 500. I used it recently for our team's tool setup. You just turn on the extension and do the work. And Scribe builds the guide as you go. It took me 30 seconds to do what used to take 20 minutes manually. It's secure too. Scribe automatically redacts sensitive info like names and emails. Plus, anyone following the process gets real-time on-screen guidance showing them exactly where to click, step by step, inside the actual tool. And Scribe doesn't just document workflows. It helps you improve them. Stop losing knowledge when people leave. To book a personalized enterprise demo, visit scribe.how/invest. That's scribe.how/invest.
Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every Invest Talk podcast. Call anytime, 24/7. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go with a YouTube comment section question. Sdanko95 says, can you take a look at ServiceNow down at these levels? Do you think the drawdown in this name due to AI fears is overblown? What would be your entry point for this name? I do think we're getting to a point in the software space that many of these names are becoming very attractive. ServiceNow, before the AI disruption, was one of the darlings, one of the names that had very low churn, very high 98, 99% renewal rate. And if you go look at the numbers, it looks like it's maintaining that, at least so far, for the most part. Earnings growth has slowed down, and revenue growth is supposed to slow into the high teens this year, well, next year, from the low 20s this year and the last couple of years. Earnings expectations for this year and next year are coming down a bit. But once again, it's kind of a darling. It's supposed to earn $5.06 next year, and it's $100 stock. 102 at the close of the day. After hours is up 3. I think it's because CRM. I know Salesforce had earnings after hours. I was actually down after hours, but ServiceNow 3%. It's not a bargain, but its free cash flow continues to power to the upside. And the technicals are improving. And now, unlike Checkpoint was far away from its 100-day moving average. Right now, it's just sitting right below the 100-day moving average. It's kind of consolidating right here below the 100-day. To me, it looks like it's threatening to break above it. So I actually like this. To me, this is one of those names that I would consider taking a gamble, shall we say, on, that will break out to the upside in the midst of a turnaround within the software space, which I think we are potentially close to seeing. So I'm going to give a relative thumbs up for ServiceNow. Let's talk about banks. And this is very underappreciated by the average person, is, are banks lending more or not? And sometimes whether lending has a lot to do with regulators. A lot of times it does. And what you're seeing right now is that regulators are loosening their standards for top American and British banks, which is allowing them to expand their balance sheet by about $1.3 trillion in just the past couple of quarters. So when you're talking about economic growth, this is a huge factor here. And there's a widening chasm between these banks and banks in Europe and Switzerland. So what's happened is, under President Trump, there's been a wave of bank deregulation, watering down a lot of the rules that were imposed post-financial crisis. And that has allowed the 8 top banks, you're talking about JP Morgan, Bank of America, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo, Morgan Stanley, Bank of New York, Mellon, and State Street, to all expand their balance sheets by about $2.5 trillion, or 15%. That is massive. That's the equivalent to the size of Citigroup alone. And the top 3 British banks are also doing the same thing. They're growing their balance sheet by about $400 billion. So obviously they're not as big of an economy, but so $400 billion is still noticeable, versus what you're seeing of the top 7 EU banks, from BNP Paribas to Deutsche Bank, etc. Their capital requirements are actually being raised by about 39 billion euros, which is tightening their ability to lend. Same is happening in Switzerland with names like UBS. Now, who are the biggest beneficiaries? Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. Goldman Sachs has lowered their tier one capital ratio from 15.1 to 13.3. What that means is more leverage. So if you're wondering why liquidity is still good and asset prices are still elevated despite what's going on in the underlying economy, a big part of this has to do with bank lending and the regulators lowering their standards. That's why you see stocks like Goldman and Morgan Stanley doing so well, because they're able to expand their balance sheet, expand their earnings. Now, I'm Justin Klein, reminding you about KPP Financial's parallel investing. When we make a trade for our clients, we make the same trade for ourselves. Same day, same price, same percentage. No front running, no special treatments, which means we invest right alongside our clients. So we share the same risk and potential for success. And you can learn more at investtalk.com. And please tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes or Spotify. And check out our videos over on YouTube as well. And please rate us over on iTunes. And good news, we posted our latest wealth webinar to our YouTube channel. It's about inflation. You can watch it for free over there. And make sure to sign up for our next wealth webinar for Tuesday, June 30th, 12 to 1 p.m. Pacific time. Beyond the Yield, How to Invest for Your Income Needs. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing.